sometimes biography is slightly scoffed at by academics, but I think the area that I work on, which is East Central Europe — it used to be called Eastern Europe, but it's really East Central Europe now — it's a very complex area, and I think looking at this area through the eyes of one individual and tracing their life, tracing their career, in this case tracing their death, which is rather a traumatic death, I think it's a way into this subject which is accessible.
Tell us his story. Who is he and what did he do?
Well, the name of this individual is Heinrich Rüther, and he lived for 40 years, 1897 to 1937. He was a German nationalist in Czechoslovakia in the 1920s and 1930s. He grew up in the late Habsburg period, so it's an interesting life. It's a life that spans living under one regime, the Habsburg Empire, and then living under interwar Czechoslovakia. He has a number of facets to his life and career. I think above all, he is one of the major youth leaders in this region. Now, you might think that that isn't perhaps of great importance, but he had a pedagogic mission that he launched in 1920, which was essentially to build up a cadre, or a huge group really, of young men who would lead a German mission in Czechoslovakia to, if you like, recover control, recover influence in this area from what was seen as a Czech-dominated state. There's a sexual element to this, in that we might well say, looking back, that he was homosexual. My argument is basically that he came to terms with his sexuality, or tried to come to terms with his sexuality, through this mission of male bonding, through this mission with young men. And what is fascinating is, and this is quite unusual, we have a whole range of sources for his personal life, because he died in 1937. He was caught up in a homosexual scandal in 1937, which was one of the biggest sex scandals in Central Europe in the 1920s and 30s. And because he died, because he committed suicide, much of this material survived. So we have letters, we have diaries, we have a kind of insight. And one has to be careful how one uses this, but one has an insight into his private feelings, his letters to young men, etc. Now, he thought that this was a high-minded, a noble mission. It wasn't a kind of a sex mission or anything like that. He took inspiration from reading Plato, from reading German poets. But there are other aspects to this. In the 1930s, the way he really achieves influence and a success for this mission is that it is taken on by the main German, what we would call Sudeten German, political movement in the 1930s, Sudeten German being the title given to the Germans of Czechoslovakia in the 20s and 30s. That was what many of them called themselves. His mission is taken on, really, by this Sudeten German political movement in the 1930s. It therefore has quite an effect in the training of young men within this mission, challenging the Czech state. So there's a lot here which is a background to what many people may know about the Munich crisis, about the collapse of Czechoslovakia, about appeasement of Hitler over that whole area.
Do you think it's important for people these days to understand what happened in places like Czechoslovakia?
The lessons from what happened there are still being talked about now, and they come up occasionally. The example of Munich 1938 is always brought up as a kind of the most terrible example of British foreign policy failure. And so my work on this area is a kind of background to that, to some extent, in showing why the British might think as they did, why they might think it was quite reasonable to destroy Czechoslovakia, although certainly they didn't quite want Hitler to march all over that part of Europe. It's a living problem, I would say, in the region as well. If you go to the Czech Republic now, you'll find, well, this is not a dead subject at all. The Czech-German question comes up at parliamentary elections in the Czech Republic. The nationalist card, if you like, is played by Czech nationalists who say that, well, you know, the danger is we'll get the Germans coming and reclaiming their property, reclaiming their land, because almost all of them were expelled after 1945. You could see it in what happened last year with the president of the Czech Republic, Václav Klaus, who refused to sign the Lisbon Treaty until he had some special agreement. Again, it was fear about Germans who've been expelled might have the way in to recover property and recover influence. So those are just two examples, but I think in people's consciousness, their understanding of who they are, where they are, they need to have a sense really of their past. In the schools, in the universities, they're educated to think in a particular way about this area, which might be a slightly nationalistic way.